Let's just read the story together about Daniel and his friends and what they had to go through and the decision that they made and the result of that decision. You may recall that Daniel is the story of a young man who was taken away into captivity along with a lot of other Jews by the Babylonians. The Babylonian army came and invaded Judah, conquered Judah and Jerusalem, and took away what were essentially hostages, a lot of the important people, members of the royal family. And among them was Daniel. And they were carried away to Babylon, long distance from their homeland, maybe about 500 miles straight. But as you go around the curve of the first, a lot further than that. Pagans, a lot of unbelievers or people who don't believe in Jehovah God, and at the mercy of their captors. We'll pick up here in chapter 1 of Daniel, in verses 3 and 4. It says that the king, and this would be King Nebuchadnezzar, the king commanded Ashpenaz, the chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish of good appearance. And Daniel was one of these people. He was of the royal family, or at least of nobility. But he was a young man. He was a youth. And so he was carried away far from home in a strange land among a strange people. And it says that these individuals that were selected were also skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. And so Daniel was not just of a noble family, but he was also a good-looking fellow. He was also smart, talented, and somewhat educated, even though he was still young. So Daniel had a lot going on. But he wasn't carried away to Babylon just on a sightseeing tour. The plan was to put these guys to work, to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans so that he could be put in the service of the king and the royal court. It says in verse 5 that the king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank, and they were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. In a lot of ways, this was an opportunity. It was both a challenge and a hardship, but at the same time, it was a chance to do something important, to perhaps be able to help his people, to mitigate some of the negative consequences of being controlled by the Babylonians. It certainly would have been a better life, perhaps in worldly terms, a better life than what he would have had if he'd stayed home. Judah faced more years of hardship, turmoil, war, and eventually complete destruction. At least over here in Babylon, he had a good home. He had a good job. In fact, he was elevated to a position of responsibility, of even power and authority. From a worldly standpoint, a lot of people would look at that and say, well, man, you know, Daniel really, he really lucked out. And yet, when you have good fortune in your life, from a worldly standpoint, it's fraught with danger of a spiritual nature. It thrusts you into circumstances where your faith is going to be tested in other ways. You know, poverty and hardship and trial is a kind of a test, but also good fortune and success is a kind of a test. It presents another set of challenges, and that's what was going to happen for Daniel here. Because of this business of being assigned the daily food of the king, because, of course, the Babylonians, they had no regard for the rules of the law of Moses with regard to cleanliness of food. lot of the food that would be served on the table of the king would have been perhaps from unclean animals. Also would not have been prepared in a kosher way, as we refer to it today. They may have prepared this food with the blood in it, and that wasn't right for meat to be served with the blood in it. It's very common in pagan culture to strangle animals rather than to drain the blood out of them. Furthermore, oftentimes this food would have been served from the table of the king, would have been offered in sacrifice to some pagan god, would have been tainted in that regard. Certainly would have been food prepared by unclean hands. And so for lots of different reasons, this food was going to be a problem for Daniel if he were to continue to follow the strictures and rules of the law of Moses. As a Jew, he was obligated to do so. But here he was in a foreign land. He was at the mercy of these foreigners. He was given what seems to be a great opportunity. And yet, at the same time, here was a challenge to his faith. It says, among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. Here are four young Jewish men among all of those who had been selected and brought into captivity. And it says that the chief, verse 7, the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar. Hananiah was called Shadrach. Mishael was called Meshach, and Azariah was called Abednego. Now, at the end of my sermon, I'm going to give out a test and see if you can remember all that. And so, basically, these fellows were given names corresponding to the pagan gods, which illustrates kind of the bind that they were in. They were going to be in service of a pagan king. They were given pagan names. And they were going to be expected to do some things which might violate or would violate their conscience. And seemingly, it was all out of their control. And yet, it says in verse 8, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord, the king, who assigned your food and your drink, for why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. Now keep in mind that these kings, these Eastern potentates, they were absolute dictators. They were the law of the land, and anything that they said, that's what went. And if you didn't obey them, if you disobeyed them, if you didn't carry out your orders as you were told to, it wasn't a matter of being demoted. It wasn't a matter of being, you know, losing your pension. It wasn't a matter of, you know, getting a black mark in your personnel file, they would just kill you. And here this administrator had been given the task of educating and providing for these young men, making sure that they were well taken care of. And Daniel came to him and said, I don't want to eat this food. Can I please not eat this food? And from the standpoint of this administrator, this eunuch, it was something that was putting his life in danger. If the king were to notice or to find out that, hey, here's some of these guys, they look kind of puny, they look like they're not doing very well, what's going on? But Daniel said to the steward, he said, Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. And there's Daniel's diet. Water and vegetables. It doesn't sound very appealing. Some people swear by a vegetable and water diet. But you see, by only eating vegetables, Daniel would be sure that he would not be eating any unclean food or any tainted food by way of the law of Moses. And if he drank only water, he would be sure that none of the wine that he was given had been poured out in libation to a pagan god. And so this was the only way that he could be sure that, what he was taking into his body was kosher, was acceptable under the law of Moses. And so that's what he asked for. And he says, test us. Just put us to the test for 10 days. Just give us water and vegetables. And then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. He proposed a test. You know, here's your baseline. Here's your control group. These guys eat the diet prescribed by the king. And here's the test group. Here's me and my friends who are only going to eat vegetables and only drink water. And we'll compare them after 10 days and we'll see how we fare. Doesn't seem like a too unreasonable request. And so the steward agreed. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. I suppose some people might ascribe that to a vegetarian diet. I ascribe it to God. God made sure that by following his scruples and following God's law and keeping faith, that Daniel and his friends passed the test. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. And so that's how that whole problem that Daniel and his friends faced, that's how it was resolved. And it says, these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And so not only were they provided for physically, not only did they excel physically above their fellow students, but mentally, educationally, wisdom. And even Daniel was given the gift of being able to prophesy or to interpret dreams. And in every matter, it says in verse 20, every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And I have to say, that's probably not too much of a trick to be better than the magicians and the enchanters. But they were so far superior that it was obvious. Obvious to the king, obvious to everyone else. And it says in verse 21 that Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. And so we're basically talking about a period of 50 years. That Daniel started out in the service of the king of Babylon. And he rose to a rank of power and of importance and responsibility. And he kept that position in one form or another for 50 years. And so by any measure, a success spiritually, because he held on to his faith, and we'll see that in subsequent stories in the book of Daniel. A success materially, a success in a secular way. But it all started with this first decision that Daniel made. I want to talk about that for a few moments tonight. You know, lessons that we can learn from this story. Sometimes, like Daniel, sometimes we're going to find ourselves in seemingly impossible situations regarding our faith. It just is always going to be the case in this world. We live among a lot of people who are not believers. We live among people who have no respect for our consideration or our concern for our scruples as children of God. We work for some of these people. We work with some of these people. We encounter these people on a daily basis. We live in neighborhoods with people who are not spiritual, who certainly don't follow the moral and religious teaching of Jesus Christ in a lot of ways. And as we encounter these people, and as we have to work with them and work for them sometimes, just as Daniel had to work for someone, we are going to be put in positions and in situations where we are going to be called upon to compromise our faith. Sometimes in small ways, sometimes in pretty big ways. That is going to happen. You can't live very long in this world without meeting those kinds of challenges. Now, look at Daniel's situation. He was completely at the mercy. You know, we live in a supposedly free country, although it's beginning to look less and less free. But we live in a free country where we're supposed to have the right to worship God according to our own conscience. And we have laws that should protect us. Daniel was in a situation where he had none of that. He had no protection, legally or otherwise. He was completely at the mercy of these pagans. And here he was ordered to do something. The king had ordered something to be done, and you don't just disobey the king without there being consequences. He was a young man. He lacked the experience and confidence that maturity can give you. Very easily intimidated and afraid. Far away from any support that family or religious leaders from his home country could have given him. What was he to do? It'd be so very easy for Daniel to say, look, there's no way that I can get out of doing what I'm being asked to do. If I try to not do what they're telling me to do, they're simply going to do away with me. So I have no choice. It would have been very easy for Daniel to say, I have no choice. I am powerless in this situation. And it's very common for us to feel exactly the same way. When pressure is put upon us by a teacher or by a boss or by a fellow worker or maybe a family member to do something that's against our conscience, to do something that we know is not right, or to refrain from doing something that we know we ought to do. And when that pressure comes, it's very easy for us to say, I have no choice. I am powerless in this situation. If I don't compromise, if I don't compromise my principles, the circumstances will be bad, the results will be bad, the consequences will be bad. If anybody could have felt that way, Daniel could have felt that way. But he didn't. That's at least not the decision that he made. You know, we may feel threatened, overwhelmed, cornered. I'm pretty sure Daniel did. I'm pretty sure he felt threatened and overwhelmed and cornered. So what did he do in those circumstances? Well, it's exactly in such situations that we face the temptation to compromise our faith. And that temptation is strong. It's some of the strongest temptations that we face. You know, we're often tempted to commit sin, to do something that's wrong from our own personal interests, our own personal desires. Sometimes that temptation comes upon us because of the interests and desires of others. Other people put us in a position to try to force us to do what they want us to do. So it's not simply a matter of our own interests tempting us to do something that was wrong. It's other people. And in those circumstances, it's easy to say, hey, well, you know, it's not me. It's not me tempting me to do this. It's this other person tempting me to do this. And I can't control them, and so I have no control. I have no power. No. Well, you might feel that way. It's a strong temptation. Temptation to lie because we're being ordered to lie or pressured to lie or maybe do something dishonest or illegal or we're being pressured to do something immoral. Maybe go to a party that we really have no business going to, or maybe engaging in some kind of deal that we have no business engaging in, or supporting something, or speaking up for something, or not speaking out against something. And all of these things put us in a very, very difficult position, just like Daniel was in a difficult position. But I want you to notice something about Daniel. Faithfulness requires a personal resolve. Personal resolve. No matter what happens. And when it gets right down to it, your religion is your religion. My religion is my religion. And I don't mean that by way of ownership. I mean by way of profession. The religion of God must be a personal profession. Each of us has to stand before God and answer to Him. And we begin that process way before the judgment day. We decide in our life, each one of us as individuals, we decide whether or not we're going to be faithful to God or not. We decide that, each of us. Your church can't decide that for you. Your parents can't decide that for you. Your friends don't decide that for you. I mean, all of these different sources, your teacher cannot decide that for you. Now, all of these sources, all of these people around us, they can put pressure on us, they can kind of guide us, counsel us, and pressure us. They can do that. But in the end, each of us decides whether we're going to be faithful to God or not for ourselves. And in order to be faithful to God, each of us has to decide that on a personal level. We have to make a commitment. We have to resolve ourselves. And that resolution has to be not based on circumstances. It can't be where we say, okay, I'm going to try to serve God as long as or until. It has to be regardless of the circumstances. And that's exactly what we see in Daniel. Daniel decided. He decided that he was not going to eat that food. Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself. Now, this passage could have been worded, Daniel resolved to try to get out from it. Or Daniel resolved to see if they would be willing to let him get out from it. It says he resolved not to defile himself. And at the point that Daniel resolved not to defile himself, he didn't know what the circumstances were going to be. He didn't know what the consequences were going to be. He didn't know whether it was going to work out or not. And that's exactly the position we all find ourselves in terms of the consequences in this life and what we suffer and what we're all going to have to go through. We cannot know. We cannot foresee how our decisions to be faithful are going to work out. We can't. Maybe they'll be pleasant. Maybe they won't be pleasant. Maybe there'll be a lot of unpleasantness. We don't know that. But before we know any of that, we have to do like Daniel and say, you know what? I'm not going to do this thing. I'm not going to do it. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to do it. And that's exactly the decision that Daniel makes, same decision we have to make. And it's a tough one. But it's the only way that we can be faithful. Such choices, I want you to understand, do not merely affect ourselves. They affect other people as well. You know, Daniel, it says Daniel resolved, but you know, his decision to remain faithful also helped his friends. Daniel was the one who said, I'm not going to eat this food. Daniel was the one who went to the steward and said, can we work this out? And in so doing, Daniel took the lead and he stood up for his friends and for his fellow children of God. And that affected not just Daniel, it affected them. It affected a lot of other Jews as well. And in a larger and longer time frame degree, it affects us too. Because we've got this wonderful story in the Word of God, an example of a faithful man, a faithful young man, doing the right thing. And we learn from that. You see, it's so very easy for us to see our spiritual choices as being only of narrow concern to ourselves. This is only about me. This is only about what affects me. This is only about what I go through or suffer. And I'm only deciding for me. It's not true. The decisions that you make about whether to be faithful or not, they affect your brethren in the church. They affect your family members. They affect your children. They affect the community at large. We need to understand something, that when we decide whether or not to compromise our faith, we're not just deciding for ourselves. Daniel became a great leader among the diaspora, among the captives in Babylon. He became an example, a stalwart example of someone living in a pagan land but not compromising with paganism. And he did that as a young man in those early days, when it seemed like one little bitty narrow choice that he was making, but it wasn't. It was a very, very important choice that Daniel was making. Let us be given vegetables to eat. He speaks for himself and for his friends as well. I want you to notice that when we follow our conscience, It's not necessary to make a big display of ourselves. We live in a day and time in which people, when they get their sensibilities offended, they immediately call the press, and they start a protest, and they make a big hullabaloo, and they get on the internet, or Twitter, and they call as much attention to themselves as they possibly can. That's not necessarily what the Lord calls us to. The Lord calls us to peace. We should not violate our conscience, but at the same time, there's no necessarily to make ourselves a pain or to stir up a lot of trouble. And I want you to notice that in his wisdom, Daniel simply went to the steward and he didn't say, "I'm not going to do this." He wasn't going to do it, but that's not where he started. He didn't start by saying his foot down and saying, "You know what, I'm absolutely not going to do this." He just asked. He said, "Is it possible?" He asked the chief of the eunuchs. He said, allow us not to defile ourselves. And I'm not sure what all the arguments were that Daniel made or how he explained this or laid this out for him, but he seems to have done it in a very reasonable and a very congenial way. That's what we ought to do. We ought to just say to someone, we don't necessarily have to make a big stink about it, but we can just say, "I'm sorry, I don't think that I can do this," or an answer. Here's a way that I propose that we do this so that I don't have to violate my conscience." And that's exactly what Daniel did. And we need to just trust God that He'll make a way for us to keep faith. We're often so very negative, and we're just quick to assume this can't work out, this won't be successful, there's no way that I'm going to be able to pull this off. We shouldn't be that way. As people of faith, there's a reason why we're trying to follow God's commands, because we trust Him. Because we believe that God's commands are good and productive and will be successful. And if we believe that, then we should be positive whenever we make these difficult decisions. We should say, "This is the right thing to do, and it'll be the good thing to do. It'll be the best thing to do. I know that my God will help me. I know that this will work out." That's the way that we ought to approach these things. Just trust Him. That's exactly what Daniel did. Daniel did this thing, and God gave Daniel favor. God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. God here is intervening on behalf of Daniel to help him with this steward. And furthermore, Daniel proposes this test. He says, "Look, just give us a chance for 10 days. And why does he do that? Because he knows that God will help him there as well. He knows that if he does the right thing, that God will see to it that it will turn out well. One way or another. He just believes it. And that's what we ought to believe. Don't assume that it'll be bad. Assume that it'll be good. That God will take care of you, as He took care of Daniel. Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. And you'll see, it'll be okay." And we just need to trust that. Trust that following our conscience will turn out well. That's what we ought to do. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. It turned out just fine. In spite of all of the dark alleys and potential problems that Daniel could have foreseen, he simply trusted in God, and it worked out well. We need to see that our small decisions of faith can have great and lasting consequences. You see, Daniel wasn't just deciding one little small matter. He was, in essence, deciding the course of his entire life from this one small matter. And we should not assume that our crises of conscience are small matters. We should assume that they're important, that they do matter, as it mattered for Daniel. In conclusion, brethren, we must prepare ourselves for the challenges that lie ahead. And there will be challenges for those of you in school, for those of you in the workplace, in your family. There are going to be challenges to your faith, challenges to your conscience. And you have to prepare yourself for that steel yourself for it. Make up your mind, as Daniel made up his mind, to do the right thing. Our faith is going to be tested. That's what life in this world means. It's a test. And the decisions that we make do matter. And we need to trust in our God. That's the lesson that we can derive from Daniel's diet. Now, if there's anybody here tonight that is having a moment of decision, are you going to do the right thing tonight or not? You need to obey the gospel, or if you need to make right some sin in your life. It's not an easy thing. But I can assure you that, as in the case of Daniel, if you will do what you know to be the right thing from the Word of God, God will take care of you. I'm not saying it will be easy in every respect. It won't be. But you make a decision that is based on faith and trust in God, it will always be the right decision. And if you need to obey the gospel tonight, come forward and say that you will as we stand and sing.
There's a fountain free.